You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Hey guys, you're watching the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And today I've got a crazy special show for you. If you're looking at sleep dentistry, there's a lot of things that you're considering, and there's one thing you're not thinking about. So today I've got my expert, good friend, Dr. Jeff Roush from Spear Education on, and he's going to tell you the truth about sleep dentistry, and it's not what you think. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. We'll see you in a second. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. We're crazy grateful that you guys are watching, and love the suggestions, love the feedback. Right now, this morning, I've got a crazy special show for you with one of my good friends about one of the hottest topics, if not the hottest topic in all of dentistry, Dr. Jeff Roush. Now, before we get started, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching the live broadcast, if you have questions, feel free to add them to the feed and I'll ask Dr. Roush himself and we'll get it straight from the expert while he's on the show. And then also, if you're watching this later on, continue to add questions to the feed because we want to make sure you get the most out of these as you're watching. Now, my buddy who's, I always joke with you and I have known each other for a long time. We got a chance to know each other. Seattle Study Club Symposium years ago, and you've gone on, you're one of the hottest speakers in the world on this topic of sleep. If people haven't seen you, they must be sleeping under a rock or something. Who is Dr. Jeff Roush? And give us a little background on you before we dig deep into this hot topic.
Well, I am a prosthodontist. I have two offices. I have an office in San Antonio. I have an office in Seattle. I practice there with Greg Kinzer and Frank Spear. I teach at the Spear Education, and we're focusing on changing the culture there to start looking at more about airway. Also, I'm a father of three great kids, so we haven't talked about them in any of the shows, but I'm going to see my son. He's getting his PhD from Cornell, so I'm going to see him this weekend, so I'm excited to be dad for a while. Hadn't had the chance for a while with
him. That is awesome. That is huge, buddy. So congratulations to him and to you. So that's awesome stuff. Now, you and I always joke, people sometimes call you the sleep, that's the guy who's an expert on sleep. And what we were talking about prior to going on the show is that a lot of this is misdirected when it comes to sleep. And even Spear this year has changed the way he looks at the pillars of diagnosis. There used to be four, now there's five. Can you talk about those trends and then what the truth is about sleep dentistry that we need to know that we're not thinking about?
And I got into this 15 years ago. Keith Thornton showed me how to make appliances, how to keep people from snoring. I was really focused on basically, I would assist women in getting their husbands back into the bedroom because they were so loud snoring. And I'd make appliances for that. And at the time, we kept it started evolving into what we called sleep dentistry or dental sleep medicine, to make it a little fancier sounding. But it really was all about the person that already had a disease or a problem. When I did a research project starting in 2007 about bruxism, it started highlighting that, in fact, some of these events that were occurring at night while you were asleep were actually maybe triggering the bruxing activity. So sleep, or what was happening during sleep, became important. The real epiphany came around when we started really focusing on the fact that this is about moments of poor breathing or effortful breathing. It's really not about sleep. You see, an appliance doesn't do anything to change sleep. What it does is it changes how you breathe. The alteration and the improvement in how you breathe can make you sleep better. So we've got the direction all wrong. It really is more about the airway management rather than trying to make them sleep better. We're not medicating them. We're not doing, you know, neurocognitive types of things. We're not attacking the brain and sleep centers. We're not working with melatonin. We're making people breathe better. What is the overall effect of that? They may sleep better and get the benefits from being asleep. So at Spear, you're mentioning that they've changed. And what's happened after 35 years of teaching is treatment planning concepts the same way, which is you begin with aesthetics, then you look at function, then you look at structure, then you look at biology. And it's a 35-year, very well-documented way of treatment planning. We're changing it this year to where we begin by saying you must figure out if the airway is compromised before you walk through those pillars. Because if the airway is compromised, decisions will change. You may say, well, I can just do veneers on this case. But in fact, if the airway is severely compromised, you could say, well, what about if we did a little orthodontics before the veneers? So instead of trying to hide the problem craniofacially, we'll actually address the craniofacial problem, and we'll address it in an interdisciplinary fashion where an ENT might be on board, or a myofunctional therapist, or many different avenues of, or directions of care can actually come. But it really is all focused about the airway of the patient and making that better. It's not, it has nothing to do with sleep. When we got that all confused in our heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh, and by the way, that's, I'll go one step further. That sleep, or what we've called a sleep problem, which is really a breathing problem, that stays with you all day long. That didn't go away. So mouth breathers during the day are having significantly more effortful breathing. And even if you're breathing through your nose all day long, but you're the person that needs CPAP to get through the night, you're still having more sympathetic activity during the day. So it doesn't go away just because you're not asleep, which highlights the fact that it really is a breathing problem.
Yeah. Now, we're going to get into this. We were talking about cortisol production and adrenal fatigue. I want you to talk about, but why is this such a hot topic, and why is it so important to have the thinking right? Let's say I'm a young dentist watching this. Jeff, why do I need to know this, and what effect or implication does it have on my dentistry in these patients?
I can't, you know, at the very beginning of this, if you asked me that question 5 years ago, I would have to hem and haw about really, well, how does it fit in? And I used to say, you know, it's good for your soul to save some people, you know, that you gotta have some chits later on to pay off for all the bad things you did. So, but really today it's, I think this actually stimulates practice growth like no other. Young dentists have been looking for a way of getting a connection with patients when they're doing treatment planning. That's the hardest thing, to get people on board. And if you're talking to a person that has had crooked teeth for a lifetime, and you say, well, we really ought to straighten your teeth and do some veneers. Nah, maybe, maybe not. But if you go to them and say you've had crooked teeth for a lifetime, and let me tell you the physical toll that's taken on you, and in fact show you research that tells you that malocclusions increase your heart rate variability, which increases your inflammation in your system, which changes how your body actually functions. And in fact, if we make it better, you're going to be healthier. Mm-hmm. Now you've got an avenue to actually start doing more dentistry in your practice. Plus, when you start doing more orthodontics, when you start moving teeth around, when you start addressing a lot of these situations, you get to do all the reparative care as well. So there is a significant amount of bread and butter dentistry that gets done because you actually are focused more on the health of the patient. So if I'm a young dentist and I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, well, I got to figure this thing out. I got to know how to do this. Now, to the other part of your question, the biggest issue is, and I keep hearing it, even though I've harped on the word airway for, I don't know, 10 years now, this is not a sleep problem. This is not about making sleep appliances. If you're hearing me say, well, we're going to make a bunch of appliances and that's going to make you rich, you're not listening, because that's not what this is about. This is about figuring out how to make people better by making an appliance of some type, and then figure out how to actually change the equation to where they can maybe be better even without the appliance. So who are those people? Well, the easiest one is kids. I mean, it happens constantly in kids. I mean, about any young dentist listening that has a good pediatric population that's coming into the practice today, about a third of the kids walking in the door are going to have some sort of issue that's related to breathing problems. Anybody that deals with, once again, a young population, a 20 to 40 year old group of female patients coming in the practice, a huge percentage of those patients are going to have neck pain, shoulder pain. They're going to have pain associated with the joints. They're going to have headaches in the morning. They're going to have fatigue. They're going to have all these things that we've called TMD types of signs and symptoms. That's just breathing problems. And it's not until we get to the fat old man that we go, oh yeah, they got apnea, I need to make an appliance. Does it ever clue in that, oh, that might be the one that Jeff's talking about? And that's wrong. I'm talking about all these patients. So too many times the sleep dentistry lecture or lecturer ends up focusing on this, you know, fat old man population. We're going to deal with horrible snoring and horrible apnea. And that's not the case at all. This is a big, huge number of patients that need to be addressed. So there's nothing better today than getting into health-based dentistry. It's a big focus in perio. There's lots of people that are out there talking about healthy dentistry. And I think that's the new direction to kind of break free of this corporate type of mold.
Yeah. Well, this is not going away for sure. As a matter of fact, it's one of the strongest conversations, if not the strongest conversation in all of technical dentistry. Now, I want you to really talk about the cortisol production, because that's a big deal, because what this starts is the ripple effect, and within it is that.
So remember I said about 15 years ago, I was learning about this. And the way that I learned, and in fact, and unfortunately, the way that it's still taught is apnea causes this, and low oxygenation causes this. And this link was always about, the fat old man that had huge events, that it was a stress on the heart. And yes, it is. But that's the end of the problem. That's practicing like physicians do. Wait until you're sick enough. I'll deal with it. If we want to be like dentists, giving fluoride, you know, doing prophys, trying to find things early on, you have to look at where the problem really began. And the problem doesn't begin by the airway closing off. The problem begins by having more effort when you breathe. We call it inspiratory flow limitation. So anything that stresses the system to make it more difficult to breathe starts a reaction in the body in order to compensate for that. So airway problems are really about chronic stress and inflammation. So if we think about chronic stress, what is that doing? Well, what the body does is stimulates the hypothalamus to activate the pituitary, to activate the adrenal glands. It's called the HPA axis. HPA axis. The HPA axis, if you kind of go back in dental school, what you'll remember is that the end production in the HPA axis is two things happen. One is you activate the autonomic nervous system, so you produce higher levels of norepinephrine in the system. And the second, the big one that everyone is familiar with, is you produce cortisol. Cortisol is a stress marker in your system. So this is not about closing the airway or snoring or anything out. This is about chronic stress in the body. That's it. And the chronic stress in the body occurs most at night because it's most challenged, but it also occurs all day long. It is a breathing problem. It is not a sleep problem. So if we look at cortisol, what happens when cortisol production goes up? And what are the stressors? Stressors are myocardial infarction, the stresses on glucose and insulin metabolism, so diabetic type of issues, hyperlipidemia. As the activation occurs, you actually get to the HPG axis. So you're talking about ovary cysts, and you're talking about erectile dysfunction, and you're talking about low testosterone. The other is that you get, because of this activity, you get either overproduction of adrenaline, so you get the insomnia and the fatigue type of feeling, or you burn the system up, in which case you get adrenal fatigue. And adrenal fatigue is the people that are kind of fuzzy, their excessive daytime sleepiness. You know, we kept talking about all these tests for sleepiness in my apnea patient. Really, what you're testing is how fatigued are your adrenal glands. So the real important factor here is we need to deal with breathing, and we need to allow the body to not be constantly stressed. Oh, and this is huge in kids, by the way. You're five times more likely in an elderly population that has a high cortisol levels to die of a heart attack. But a kid with high cortisol levels is absolutely having the same impact on their body. The chronic stress in the system is damaging them just the same way that it damages an adult population. So metabolic syndrome, endothelial dysfunction, all that happens in kids because of this problem as well. Oh, obesity, you know, huge problem there. Cortisol causes increase in fat storage, changes in how the body reacts to food, changes in how the brain wants to eat. It drives people to eat more carbs because it needs to satiate the adrenal component and the cortisol component. Anyway, back to kids. Can you tell I'm excited about this topic?
I love this. Keep going. Yeah.
So if you go in on kids and actually fix their airway and monitor them, not by did the apnea get better, monitor them by cortisol, their cortisol production gets under control. So you know when you fix the kid. You go in and do tonsils and adenoids, you can test the sleep all day long. But remember, in past episodes, we talked about that most sleep tests miss a huge part of this. And so the better way to test them is test their cortisol levels. If that gets back to norms, now you know you fixed the problem. Same with adults that are on CPAP. In the last 2 weeks, I've had three patients walk in and say, I've been on CPAP forever. It's starting to not work. I wake up, I drag out of bed. I can barely get out of bed. And what they're saying is, I have adrenal fatigue, and I have this underlying breathing problem that CPAP's not taking care of. Cortisol levels are off the scale.
Yeah. Now go back to the kids for a second, because we were talking about the hyper-stressed adrenal glands and then cortisol levels being high. And everybody knows this. If you're watching this, a lot of adults that have kids compensate with medication. And I think, you know, from what it's an epidemic that people are just written a script for this when it comes to children that are having these, you know, you see these symptoms. And so that's the treatment. Would you agree? Is that a bigger problem than we would think it is?
Medication?
Yeah, for these.
Yeah, absolutely. A recent study came out of Stanford, and they did two things in the study that are interesting. The first is, and we talked about it in the past, about how sleep studies are scored. The first part is that they went in on, I think it was 50 kids that had sleep studies. and they scored them the traditional way that the American Academy of Sleep Medicine says to score it. At the end of that, these 50 kids, I think it was like 16% of them had what they would consider disease. So they had apnea to a level that it would warrant treatment. Mm-hmm. So Stanford for children has a different scoring system. So instead of, and just a quick overview, instead of a 4% desaturation, they might use a 2% or arousal. In other words, kids don't desaturate at the rate that an adult does. So little events have an impact. All right. Mm-hmm. So they went and rescored these kids and found 100% of the kids had a problem that needed to be treated. Wow. Okay. Now, of the kids in the study, there were actually, it was more than 50. There were 93 kids that were being medicated in the study. And of those kids that were medicated for signs and symptoms, a lot of them were actually medicated after the sleep study was done. So I said that kind of a goofy way. Let me just make it really simple. They had a bunch of children that were medicated for attention deficit and all kinds of different things. And some of the children were medicated before the sleep study, and the sleep study did nothing to make the physician take them off the meds. Mm. The other group of kids that were medicated were not medicated before the sleep study, but because the sleep study came back and said they're fine, then they were placed on medication. Now, remember, the Stanford group said nobody was fine. Mm. So they went in and treated everyone. And at the end, all but 5 kids were off all their medications. It was a breathing problem. All along, it was just a subclinical breathing problem based on today's current way of reading a sleep study. This is about little events that stimulate the body to produce chronic stress in the system. So a much better way of evaluating the health in our kids is not looking at apneas and hypopneas. It's finding some biomarker like cortisol, like C-reactive protein, you know, anything that really looks at how the body is reacting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. What are some other things, considerations when it comes to the sleep issue that dentists aren't considering in this, as you look at the road ahead? In this study.
Okay. So I think two things. And I don't know, let me start by saying, by doing it a different way. What are physicians not paying attention to? And I would say that's a fair number of things. For example, they know nothing about what a dentist can do. And that's our job to go educate them as to what we can do. Because their assumption is that the mouth is a static element and the tongue and tongue position are static and nothing can be done about it. And so they figure workarounds. So CPAP is a workaround. Mm-hmm. And it fails pretty miserably when you're trying to work around too many things, like, you know, a badly deviated septum or, you know, whatever. So bad noses, little mouths, big tongues. I mean, they're all doing workarounds and they just keep cranking the pressure up to see if they can get around the problem. We as dentists know that it is a fluid situation that can be changed at any age, where the teeth are, how the tongue is positioned, how the jaw is positioned. We can change it at any time we want. So it's just a matter of desire at some point. Now, what do dentists not know? Dentists, some of it is what can be done in orthodontics now. It is difficult to stay current in all avenues when you're a general dentist because you got to be good at everything. The things that I think when I was a general dentist that I gave on was studying what other specialties were doing. So I would be learning about what I do and I'd pick up little tips about what others are doing. And now, because of my focus, I probably read more ortho literature than most orthodontists do. I mean, it's like a passion. It's like this old, I really want to be an orthodontist. So, I think one of the things that dentistry is missing out on is the opportunities that orthodontics provides now. The use of temporary anchorage devices, the use of mini implants, the use of, last time when we talked about using expanders on adults that will actually separate the sutural connection where we never thought they would before or could be before, the use of functional appliances. I think a lot of general dentists are missing what can happen in the world of orthodontics. And unfortunately, orthodontists are missing it too. The best practice model, if you had a best practice show on orthodontics, it would not include doing what I'm talking about. The best practices show in orthodontics would be to get 10 to 12 year old kids in and start just putting wires on and straightening teeth. It really takes an extra commitment from the orthodontist to start saying it's not about the teeth anymore. Remember, Spear used to say aesthetics, function, structure, biology. Orthodontics is, if you start with aesthetics, it's about the teeth. It's not about the teeth. It's about the skeleton. And that's the airway part of it. So for me, it's about augmenting or altering the skeletal component of this. And that requires a special orthodontist. So dentists are missing what orthodontics can do and what we can do in general. And in fact, we ought to be leaders. We ought to be leading this. The physicians ought to be our teammates our referrals rather than us sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah. Now you have a ton of courses on this and we'll get that in a second, but any other considerations as dentists are looking at the literature and watching these courses that, because if you get the thinking right, now you can start to work on the processes or think about your practice. What are some other things that you see out there where the thinking is just not right on how we look at the breathing problem in dentistry?
The biggest one that always jumps to mind really quick is that we always jump to making people appliances.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of the direction you were going with that question. And we end up having one tool, and there are so many tools we have, in our bag. It's just amazing how many opportunities. The patients that I see all day long, I'm just teaching them to breathe better. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving them some simple guidelines that during the day and at night that they can actually improve their breathing through their nose. And just changing that one part of the equation has such a dramatic impact on patients. I mean, there are studies out there that tell us that you can take severe apneic patients and just by making them breathe better, you can take that apnea level down significantly to where maybe it's not about jutting their jaw out 80, 90, 100% of the distance that it can possibly go. But in fact, maybe it's only moving it a little bit. Maybe it's only moving it a few millimeters along with all these other things that can be done. So if we really think about it as a breathing problem, and at the core of breathing problems is that we're not breathing through our nose and we're breathing in a, we're breathing too aggressively. We're hyperventilating ourselves all the time. And we're breathing from our chest rather than actually inhaling deep into our lungs. I was on a flight just the other day and I got weird conversations on flights, but we got to talking about breathing and I said, well, just for a minute, let's put our hand on our stomach and let's feel our stomach actually go out as you're trying to breathe. And let's bring air until you can feel it all the way down to the bottom of your lungs. And the person in just a few moments calmed their breathing, calmed themselves. And I mean, it was a tremendous difference that it could make in just teaching them a very simple exercise to improve breathing. Now, I do this a lot and I've got an app that assists me. And I'm still not that good at it. But when I get stressed and when I feel it, I can calm myself pretty quickly just by changing the mode of breathing. And at night when you're asleep, it makes the most difference, some of the things that we're doing there.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. Well, buddy, I appreciate this so much. And I know we only get you for a short period of time, but if people want to see more of you, I know you have a whole bunch of courses. You also lecture. What's the best way, if I'm a dentist watching this, that I can start the educational path of this?
You know, the best way, and the really nice thing, I was telling you that Frank Spear has enough faith to change what he's been doing 35 years and to believe in this enough that airway has taken a pretty big role in his diagnostic sequence. And with that commitment, what he's done is allowed me to teach two different types of courses out at Spear Education in Scottsdale. The first is a seminar series. So it's a 2 days. We're doing the first one in August 18 and 19, which probably isn't the greatest time to be in Arizona, but they got great air conditioning in the lecture hall. But the other one is this year is like December 15, 16, something like that. And that is a great time to be there. But that I've done that for years now. That's been kind of the staple of what I've done is go out and lecture to groups. The huge commitment that he's made is actually to allow me to teach a workshop there. And so in October, the end of October, 26, 7, 8, I believe are the dates. It's a 3-day workshop where we're going to walk through exactly how I treat patients. So how we talk to them in the interview, how we screen them, all of the what I call the Seattle protocol, which is a 6-step protocol that general dentists will do in walking both their airway and TMD patients through to find the proper control strategy. And then most importantly, we're going to show case after case of how that turns into real dentistry. What you do at the end, you're not just giving them an appliance, patting them on the butt and saying goodbye. You're actually saying, let's do something that turns into a change. And that change routinely has dentistry involved in it. And then as we started the conversation, we're going to have a huge part of this is going to focus on kids. So a lot of people end up, you ask, why does it change and why is it so hot? It's because everybody wants their kids to be healthy. And so we're going to spend a tremendous amount of time really focusing in on kids and how to make them healthy for a lifetime.
That's awesome. So we're going to put a link in the actual post
Spear,
itself.
The easy way is speareducation.com.
Check it out. This guy is amazing. You won't be bored for a second. He is an incredible lecturer. So stay on, my friend, for just a little bit while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for watching. Really appreciate you being on the broadcast. Now, do me a favor. If you found this valuable, please hit the share button. Share this with all your friends because we'd obviously love great information like this to protect this great profession that we all absolutely enjoy. So until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys have a great rest of your day.